This is the State of Things broadcasting from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio in downtown Asheville today. I'm Frank Stachow. The Asheville City Police Department faces potential budget cuts a month after the leak of body cam footage showing an officer beating a black pedestrian. The beating by a white former police officer prompted outrage in the city. The former officer now faces criminal charges, the city manager has been fired, and now three Asheville City Council members are calling for the city's police department budget to be cut, this in the wake of that incident. Joining us now is Blue Ridge Public Radio News Director Matt Bush. Matt, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank, and welcome to Asheville.
It's good to be here and in the midst of what is turmoil still over this story. And do take us back to what happened in August that led up to what we're seeing today.
So in August, late on the night of August 24th and into the morning of August 25th, Johnny Jermaine Rush, an African-American man, was walking, was stopped by Asheville police officers too for suspected jaywalking just south of where we are right now. And the incidents led to Officer Chris Hickman, now no longer with the Asheville Police Force, stopped him, tackled him to the ground, and video has shown now of him tasing and shocking and choking Johnny Rush. This incident did not come out for 6 months publicly. It was known in some circles within the city, but not publicly 6 months until the footage from one of the body cameras was leaked to the Asheville Citizen Times, which then published it. As we know, body camera footage in North Carolina is not public record. And ever since then, that's been a little more than a month now. This has really shaken the city at sort of all levels, this incident.
As we say, the former officer now facing criminal charges.
He faces criminal charges. He resigned from the force in January.
All right. And the city manager.
City manager was removed from his post, Gary Jackson, by city council a few weeks after the incident became public. He was already retiring at the end of this year, but he was removed immediately after two public meetings. One was in the South Side community, and one was a city council meeting where people showed up to really express their anger. And a lot of it was at the police department. A lot of it was at city government. And as the city manager, that's the most powerful position in city government. A lot of anger was directed at him.
And some of it went to the police chief, who is still on the job.
The police chief is still on the job and will be here tomorrow.
All right. So tell us about that and maybe some of the thought process around that, because if you think about the city manager, obviously in charge, but the police chief more directly in charge. So what's the politics around this?
So where this came through is the police chief, obviously this incident didn't come to light for 6 months, and Officer Chris Hickman didn't resign from the force until 4 months after it. And there was no criminal investigation until then. So a lot of the anger has been at that. Why did it take so long for it to become public? Why did it take so long for an investigation to begin? It took so long that the State Bureau of Investigation, which typically investigates these incidents, declined to do so. So the Asheville Police Department was investigating itself, and any transparency in government, good government advocates will say that's not something the police department should be doing. So a lot of the anger was directed at that. Within what was directed at the now former city manager, a lot was how it was reported within city government. We had the mayor and the city council saying they knew nothing of this until it became public in the paper. And the police chief at that time was reporting to an assistant city manager, not the main city manager. And there was a lot of others. There was this community meeting that happened, at the beginning of March, about a week after the incident became public. That was where a lot of the anger came through. But it was all these other existing issues that have been here regarding segregation and gentrification really came up with this incident, showing just another example of it. And that's where a lot of the anger at the city manager and the city government in general was really coming from.
That said, the police chief, Tammy Hooper, has said she's made some progress and has taken that seriously from the time she stepped into office. That was 2015, made some changes and reforms, and really had a record to show for it when this happened, right?
Right. The day before it became public in the Citizen Times, the police released their annual use of force report and said that, excessive use of force was down more than 60%. That was the day before this became public, that they were using less force and it was down 60% in 1 year. So there were some reforms, and I think that's where her support on city council sort of lies, that there were people, five of the seven that have gone public with their thoughts on this have said they still support her because they think of some of the reforms. But there were others who said, this takes us back to ground zero. Mm-hmm. What has been done in the 3 years you've been here really has been wiped away with what has happened.
Wait, just tell us about these budget cuts. How do they fit into this picture?
So that's just in the general local government going through their budgets and having to look at things and all that. But at a meeting this week, Councilman Brian Haynes proposed a $1.2 million cut in the police department budget, saying that his plan directly comes from what happened. Said they had some other plans that cut far less than that within the city budget of the police department. So that's just sort of happened as, you know, regular budgetary things happen in local governments. That's how that came up. Right. But it came up at the same time that this incident has happened. And like I said, it still just sort of hangs around kind of everything here right now. Al Whitesides, as a county commissioner, was at a – and a longtime civil rights activist was at a meeting, a joint meeting between the council and the county commissioners, and said he'd never seen morale in Asheville worse than it is after this. And that's not just in the African-American community. He said it's with everyone. He's never seen morale worse in the city.
So let's talk about some of the concrete suggestions that are coming out of this, both at the county level and the city level. And that has to do with a citizens commission of sorts that would have access to this video and be reporting an account, and to whom the police department would be accountable. You know, what's behind that? How far do you think it might go?
Again, I think it stems from the fact that police body camera footage isn't public record in North Carolina. That's a state law. So anything that sort of would allow an independent body to look at this has to fit within state law with it, this also. But I think, again, it comes back to transparency. And the city council has been very big on trying to show transparency in this. After that incident came out, they released all these personnel records about Officer Chris Hickman and showed that he had some prior incidents to this one. They sued to release all the other body camera footage that was related to this incident. So there are now 9 videos out there that can show various parts of this incident. But I think the body camera footage, because when these started being put on officers, not just here, but nationally, it was this huge, it was a lot of, you know, discussion about how this will show what these incidents of police brutality and police use of force, how the effect it's going to have on that. Well, we're still working through that now that all these agencies use these. And I think some of it is can we, you know, should we always trust the police department with these things that if they're not made public, we would have never known? Had the footage never been leaked to the paper, we would not know.
And there are human rights commissions and human relations committees that are set up all along in other cities so that there's a standing body that looks at this and we don't have to wait for it to come out.
In Asheville this week, at the same meeting where these budget cuts were actually right after it, but did create a human relations commission that will now start finding people to serve on that commission.
All right. Well, Matt, I want to turn to another story here in Western North Carolina. Longtime Buncombe County manager is set to appear in court on Friday. Wanda Green was indicted by a federal grand jury on charges of fraud, conspiracy, and embezzlement. Jennifer Bowman is a Buncombe County government reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. She's been following the story. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Tell us about this. Wanda Green had been on the job for quite a while and had been seen as doing a good job, but for apparently for 10 years, according to the indictment, the allegations are they were committing fraud and embezzlement.
Yeah, you've seen kind of the first major step in what has probably seemed like a pretty long investigation here in Buncombe County, about 9 months until we saw that indictment. But, you know, Wanda Green had served as county manager for 20 years, was well-respected, known for having led the county to high bond ratings, known to be financially savvy. And this indictment says that for half the time that she was county manager, she's been tied to using county funds for improper purchases.
You talk about a 9-month investigation. It's a long time, but if it's been going on for 10 years, how was it not detected in an audit?
Yeah, there's been, you know, in addition to the $200,000, you know, the Citizen Times has done a lot of public records requests since the investigation was announced, and we've seen almost $3.6 million of spending that maybe it's not illegal. The feds are the ones who'll decide that, but are controversial. And some of these things were downright approved by commissioners, you know, a retention incentive program that gave employees an additional year of salary to stay on. Equestrian center expenses that weren't approved by commissioners, but there's clear invoices of that. So I think that is a question we're seeing as year and years go by of a clean audit and a good reputation. This apparently had been going on.
We're talking about gift cards that are purchased, and then those gift cards are used. Not only that, and her son has also been indicted in this, Michael, right?
Yes. Well, so they have tied specifically to their county issued credit cards for both Wanda Green and her son Michael Green, and you saw purchases from places like TJ Maxx, Target, Walmart, and then gift cards. So they've also tied in spending from assistance credit cards, those who worked for Wanda Green, and in total, they have seen more than $90,000 worth of gift cards that were purchased. And then the investigators turned around and did an additional step and found out how those gift cards were used. They were used largely for everyday routine items, from like toiletries to women's lingerie, even, and to, you know, video game systems as well. well, and have tied some of those gift cards to spending by a yet-to-be-named county commissioner.
Remarkably enough, she was accountable to herself for these payments. So there was she signed off on her own payments.
It was quite a detailed indictment. A lot of talk about the process between, you know, how the county does this. And yes, Wanda Green did not require any additional approval for her own purchases. And they saw something even more unusual when you look at her son's purchases. He didn't have anyone reviewing his as well.
He had his credit card revoked when he was working for the county for this very thing. He had been essentially caught.
Yeah, an internal auditor found in a 2009 review what was described as systematic fraud committed against the county. And that matter was referred to the county manager, who happened to be his mother. There is no record of disciplinary action or obviously termination from that. He did have his card revoked, but that's as far as it got.
All right. And the auditor who is looking through, the outside auditor, has is no longer on the case, as I understand it. Has been dismissed.
The outside auditor, so the county had used an outside auditing firm here based in Asheville, Gold Killian, for about 13 years. That's a move that county officials say is typical. They've seen other counties stick with long time, you know, periods of long time with firms, but they've decided to go a different route and have a new firm.
Jennifer Bowman, Buncombe County Government Reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. We will stay tuned, but thank you for this update.
Thank you.
You can find links, of course, to Matt Bush's reporting and Jennifer's reporting for the Asheville Citizen-Times at our work site. Our website is stateofthings.org. Matt's going to stay with us and talk about another story from Blue Ridge Public Radio, Mission Health, about to be bought by a for-profit healthcare firm. You'll hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from Blue Ridge Public Radio in downtown Asheville. I'm Frank Stachow. The not-for-profit Mission Health Hospital System is the largest healthcare provider in western North Carolina and one of the region's biggest employers. Talks are now underway for the sale of Mission Health to the for-profit healthcare titan Hospital Corporation of America. Still with me in the studio is Blue Ridge Public Radio News Director Matt Bush. So, Matt, we've talked about Mission Health a number of times, but that was mostly about its imbroglio with Blue Cross Blue Shield. Now we're talking about the sale of this nonprofit to a for-profit. Tell us more.
This is a big deal because Mission not only is the major health care system throughout this entire region, it's also the largest employer. So this is another one where it sort of came in. We've had all these things happening in the last really month and a half. This is really big because they're nonprofit, and this would be going to a for-profit healthcare firm that owns hospitals and operates them in 20 states in the United Kingdom. So it's very large, you know. But it looks – one, we can look back at some of the things that have been happening in the last few years with Mission. In particular, they've closed a lot of delivery wards in some of their more rural areas and all that sort of stuff, citing costs and citing liability. That happened, really angering some of the people in those areas. And then now this potential sale that's happening, you kind of look back at those and go, oh, maybe that's what those were related to. And I think the concerns about this are is that, you know, healthcare is so personal, so intimate for so many people. They don't want to hear for profit. They don't want to hear that their healthcare is about money. And I think that's where so much of the concern is. Now, the sale hasn't happened. They're just in a negotiation phase. We won't really know until sometime early in the summer whether this actually goes through, because it could technically still not happen and we'd be sitting where we are right now. But I think that's where a lot of it comes through. When people hear, you know, their healthcare and then for profit and whether it has to deal with money, I think that's where everybody has that sort of, I don't know what the right word is, but I mean, reluctance or just the sort of wariness.
An expression of anxiety, which you can hear, but I wonder if it's also expressing itself or manifesting in any kind of official way. Is there official pushback or any threats that there will be action to try to prevent it?
Nothing big. Governor Roy Cooper was here a few weeks ago and was at Mission speaking at an event, and afterwards said, well, we have this time right now. We have to ask a lot of questions. His concerns were to make sure that you know, people were on Medicare and Medicaid and those sorts of people were still going to – their healthcare was not going to be affected by this. And that's a lot of – particularly in the rural hospitals the Mission owns, that's a lot of the people that show up there use those programs or don't have health insurance at all.
How much do we know about Hospital Corporation of America?
They're big. Yeah. they're very, very big. They operate hospitals in a lot of places. There's been some concerns with some of the things that they've done. Mission has said, you know, they don't expect any job losses that would not be outside of the market. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, nothing large scale of that sort of thing at the sale.
Well, it's sort of been clear. You talked about some of the closures that Mission Health has had to do before, again, for profitability. I mean, the fact is you have to more or less make about as much money as you spend to stay in business. And so those kinds of considerations are true if you're nonprofit or for-profit. Those have been closing anyway. So then the question is whether there'd be more of that to to increase the to make the bottom line look better, or whether some efficiencies could be made and perhaps even better service. What is Hospital Corporation of America said? Have they made any promises?
Very little. Yeah. They've been very little because the sale hasn't gone through. Yeah. And I think Mission put out a statement saying the day that they announced this, and they've said this really helps us with our long term financial viability and operating. It isn't just here; it's all rural parts of the United States. Healthcare has been it's very expensive to do healthcare in those areas for any number of reasons. But that's the operator. As a patient, as the people who live here that go to these hospitals, in many ways, they just want to be able to know they're going to be able to go to the doctor and they will be covered if they do. So anything like this, particularly in an area where they are the main health system, there are some others, but they are the main health system in this area, that's where the anxiety, I think, comes from.
What happens when you're a nonprofit? You essentially go out of business when you sell yourself, but you've made a sale and you have this money in your pocket. Where's that money go?
So they're going to create a foundation that will charitable foundation that will give money to all sorts of groups. I think you see that with a lot of other very large scale healthcare entities that are for-profit insurers and operators and all that. So that's part of this. But again, those are just, they've said that. They've said this is where the things can go until the sale actually happens. And I think people can actually see things and look at them and see where this money might be going. And we can see the documents and all that. At this point, it's okay. Everyone's just saying, okay, you say that. We'll believe it when it happens.
We will watch every step of the way, and we will stay tuned. Matt Bush, News Director for Blue Ridge Public Radio, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.